And welcome again to another episode of FC Tokyo Kai Guys Radio. I am your host, Thomas Pennington. Along with me again, as always, is Alex Bishop. And today we are also joined, thankfully, by Mr. Niall from another part of the FC Tokyo Kai Guys community. Niall, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Hello. My name is Niall. I've been in Tokyo since August 2018 and following the club since then. I very much on the periphery where I help out but don't really do too much stuff. So thanks for having me on the podcast today, guys.
Cheers for joining us. I know you're along for the ride with all of our struggles here, and it's a great community we've got here. Just looking at the three of us here, I think we all support a different club in England with regards to myself, Manchester United. Alex, Everton, and yourself, Leeds. I don't know how we make it work, but we certainly do at match days. But Alex, you are back in the country as well. I think you just had a little bit of a trip back to England.
I did, yeah. After a long time with COVID and everything, right? After about 2.5 years being locked here in Japan, per se. Back to England for 2 weeks. Managed to watch a few of the Tokyo games from afar, albeit a semi-reasonable hour of about 5 a.m. back in the UK. Yeah, and then a further...
Dedication.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's a little bit better than Everton at the moment, right? So I've got to keep the spirits up somehow.
I really think Tokyo is like our bright side. United haven't been having the greatest run of form. Leeds haven't been having the greatest run. Everton as well. You know, it's like Tokyo's been our shining light. So
Who'd have thought?
Yeah. I know. What a thought that is. But let's get into it. So, you know, we've since our last podcast, COVID went through the club and we had to suspend operations for a couple of match days. So we unfortunately didn't get around to match day two yet. I think that's coming up late April. I don't know the exact midweek day that's scheduled for, but yeah, that game's coming up again.
So game week nine.
Week nine.
So yeah. Just before, I think it's the game week just before all the ACL guys go off to the ACL, right? So this is important. Yeah, for fantasy,
I had it marked on my calendar. I don't have it handy on me right now. But anyway, we've had in that span of time, we've had two cup games. Not the greatest point total we got from that. A loss and a draw. A 0-0 game at home and a 1-0 loss to Fukuoka. And then of course the league has been the surprise, where it's three wins on the trot. Against Cerezo, Hiroshima, and Kyoto. Now, Alex, let's start with you. What have your thoughts been on the first month, let's say, of Albert Ball?
Yeah, I mean, expectations have been exceeded in terms of points on the board. It's been quite surprising how quickly it's all kind of come together. We did see it in the first game against Kawasaki, right? We were very, very positive, very front-footed, very assertive. We thought it was going to be very disjointed in the beginning, especially after what we've seen from these players in previous seasons, right? They've struggled to find any synergy. It's a very new system coming in now with Albert compared to the more conservative Kenta Hasegawa, who we had for about 3 or 4 seasons, was it? Albert's come in. It's a very, much more kind of, how do we say, like front-footed kind of
Cruyff progressive football.
Progressive football, yeah, that's a very good way to articulate it. You'd think in any situation it would take, players to kind of take a little bit of time to get used to it, but it seems to have come together quite quickly. Everybody seems to be enjoying it. It's hard to pick any kind of faults, really, within the current ranks. Everybody seems to be doing the job quite well. We're seeing some new things from some of the players. Younger players are getting chances. I'm sure we're going to come on to the games, but yeah, we've got a couple of wins. Couple of wins, like 3 wins right now. So it's all looking quite good moving forward, yeah.
To be fair, that Kyoto game should have been a 1-1 match in the end. Like that, I don't know if you saw their last chance right at the death, right on 95 minutes. They had like an open goal from maybe about 4 yards. guess who was at fault for this one, not tracking back? Mr. Ogawa lost his man, and they had he had an open net. I think the ball was like just a bit behind him, so he had to kind of pull the ball, you know, kind of stretch his leg back, and that's why he skied it over the bar. But, you know, yeah, that was a lucky one. But yeah, three wins, I'll take that. So now, how about yourself? What have your thoughts been on Albert's football?
I mean,
you've only known Hasegawa like myself. Like, I've been a ticket holder since the Hasegawa era started, yourself as well.
Yeah, I mean, compared to Hasegawa, it's completely night and day. Obviously, I was here for the title push, and that was really good. But I think, you know, the results were masking the football, I suppose. And for half the season, yep, we had Kubo, and it was just give the ball to Kubo and see what he does.
Really,
and like last year, I think it just completely ran out of steam. What was working just stopped. So I think having Puig come in and just completely revamp and revitalize like Tokyo's style of football, it's completely felt fresh. I think it's, you know, really, really working. The results are showing, you know, we're about the top four. I haven't checked the league table.
We are currently fifth, I think it is. I mean, you know, obviously Marinos and Frontale have played 7 games to us playing 4. But the teams around us, yeah, we're pretty much up there.
Yeah, well, like Alex said, you know, if you'd have said last month, we'll be in this position, 3 wins, 1 loss,
yeah,
I'd be more than happy to take that. I think the signs are generally positive. I think we could be a bit better up front in front of goal. I think that's where we've been lacking. I think we've been pretty wasteful.
Yeah.
But, you know, in general football, it feels like, oh, there's some meat to this. There's something good going on.
Yeah, it's quite, it really is quite bizarre. Like, entertainment-wise, it's been much more pleasing to watch, you know. I remember watching a couple of games for Hasegawa, and whenever it came to punting the ball up forward, you know, it would be hopeful that Nagai could get onto it, and then, you know, Diego could create some space by pulling a couple of guys with them, and then, you know, that was it. The games that so far we've seen this season where it's just been passing, a lot more control of the ball, trying to open the team up, you know. The game against Hiroshima, I think we were quite fortunate with the second goal that we scored, but it was just the way that we pinged the ball around, you know, to create a little bit of chaos in their box and finished off that second goal. You know, that kind of thing, like, we haven't seen that under Hasegawa, and I think that's just been part of the incredible turnaround in fortunes, I guess you could say, of how the team have really come alive under him. I'll put this question to you guys. Has there been a standout player in your book so far out of the five games that we've seen, 6 games?
For me, I mean, it's kind of a tough one to pick out somebody, you know, specifically. Like Conno coming in with Leandro being injured, right? So Conno, it's opened up a door for Conno to come in and start a few games over on that right attack side. Anyone who saw him, you know, the brief games, the brief spell he had last season, or how he's come through the ranks at Tokyo with the under-23s, will know that he's quite technically gifted. You know, on the ball, in terms of his delivery, he can shoot from outside the box as well. He got that cracker against Hiroshima last season, right? And seeing him thrive so quickly, he's been pretty standout. I would mention, you know, now that Leandro has been injured, and it looks like he's going to be out for another 6 to 8 weeks, I think it was reported by the club a week ago. So we're, you know, a month and a half away from that. I think Conno might make a case to be the starting right-sided attacker ahead of Leandro, possibly. That remains
just on that, the clarity from Albert has been night and day by comparison to what we've gotten under Hasegawa. You know, when Leandro went out injured, you know, he came out, I think he made a post on Twitter saying like unfortunately he's out and he's a critical part of the team, and, you know, he will be missed, but, you know, this is a perfect time for you know, someone to take his place. And, you know, as you said, Alex, like, Kono's pretty much done that by coming in with a goal and an assist so far. You know, I think it was the winner versus Osaka, and he set up the goal, I think it was for Kyoto, for Diego's 50th, as we might add. But yeah, Alex, like, well, you seem to know a lot more about Kono than most. You know, you hyped him up a lot last season, unfortunately, before he got injured. But what's your take on him so far?
Well, yeah, like as I said, I mean, he's a very, very dynamic player. His skills, I mean, he has both like skills on the ball and off the ball, right? On the ball, he's best as a wide player, usually on the right side. He's right footed, dribbling inside. He can take players on. He can turn really quickly. I mean, we should mention that his size, he is absolutely tiny, right? He stands at a whopping, I think it's something like 160 centimeters tall.
Yeah, very definitely, you see in the 11, like, he's like, yeah, there's a massive drop off.
You think he's someone's kid, or you think he's the match day mascot or something like that. Like, right? But no, he's got a very small center of gravity, right? So he can turn, he can move, he can take players on. He's great at sending in crosses. He can shoot, usually from range. Off the ball, you'll see him chasing down every ball. If he gives the ball away, or if he's, you know, if there's a dangerous situation, he'll be the first to kind of go in there, go after the man, fly in there with a tackle. Sometimes he comes off worse. Sometimes he comes off better. Sometimes he gives away a foul. He's a little bit, I'd say he's a bit, you know, a bit reckless sometimes like that. But, you know, that's a small thing to worry about. But yeah, I mean, he's very technically, like I say, he's a very technically gifted player. Has been since, you know, I've been watching him since his early days at Tokyo. He was in that Hosei University side that beat, I think they beat Gamba, and then they went on to beat Corfu or someone like that in the Emperor's Cup 2019. They did really well as a university team. He was part of that team, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's come from quite good, quite strong beginnings. But yeah, I think he's going to be a very, very important piece of Pooch Ball moving forward. If Leandro does stay out of the side, or even if he gets back in and we need, like, you know, a replacement. Very different player to Leandro, of course, we should mention. But I think, yeah, this kind of football, right? We're not just talking like hoof ball, long ball tactics. Give the ball to the guy and let him sprint up the pitch. And if the aid is available, great. If not, then the chance just dies out. I think he's a very creative, going to be a very, very important part of our player. So, thumbs up from me, I think, and a very key component.
I think that's one of the big shifts, I think, as well with Pooch Ball. Under Hasegawa, I think we felt that the substitutions were very prescribed and like pre-planned out. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've seen under Pooch is that he's happy to make like very big changes. And if we've got those big changes off the bench, so we can bring on Kono for Leandro or vice versa, like that can only be a good thing for us.
I think you're absolutely bang on with that too, because, like, you know, to highlight your point there now, like the game against Hiroshima, you know, we swapped up or mixed up our defense right at halftime. You know, we took off Treverson and brought in like a little bit more attacking options. Nagatomo got his first minutes in the season that earned him a national call up as a result of that. But yeah, and it paid off, right? Because, you know, shortly after that, we got the two quick fire goals, and then we were off and running. I think, you know, attacking wise, I think the team is looking really good. The build up sometimes can be quite slow. Like, you know, in the Hiroshima game, I noticed that Hiroshima's press was keeping us in our box pretty much for most of the first half. And it was just when there's no ball to play forward, they go back. And that's why we were seeing a lot of balls back to Slovic, you know, Morishige. And it was just like the defense were just waiting for their opposition to make a mistake before they could pass the ball forward. I think that's part of the teething problems that maybe we have, because those players were used to, you know, kicking it up the field for one of the attackers to run onto and, you know, hope for the best. And now you've got Puig, who's come in and given us this different philosophy that the players are still, I think, adapting and learning. But, you know, so far, I think the team has come off quite well. Now, I didn't get yours, but who's your player so far that you've enjoyed the most?
I mean, enjoy is relative. I think...
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking about this too much. I think maybe my player of the season so far has to be Slovic, has to be Kuba, just because of like the difference he's made. I know there's a lot of questions about his passing and his distribution, but as an actual goalkeeper, you know, set pieces, he really commands the box. I don't know. Yep. I just feel so much more at ease with him in between the sticks. You know, he's just got a good presence about him. And granted, you know, his distribution isn't that good, but I guess we've got 10 other players for that. But I think he's really stood out. He's made some really important saves for us throughout the year. And just that feeling of solidity at the back, it's the must have felt in my time following Tokyo.
And you know, the crazy thing is, the guy whose spot he took, Hatano, I think Hatano is still like the number one super fan for FC Tokyo, because you saw him sprinting onto the pitch when we score goals. You see him at full time, like fully embracing, you know, Slovak and whatnot. Like, he just is so happy that the team is winning, even though that the team just brought in a goalkeeper to basically take over his position. You know, he's still like, it doesn't matter. The team's first. And, you know, I do give Hatano props for that.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think there's been times where on TV, you know, you've seen Hatano like crawling around the technical area behind Pooch. So
yeah, it's quite funny to see him, because he is like a proper super fan. So credit to him on that one.
He can be quite boisterous on the I've been to a few games, and maybe you can't see it on TV, but I think it was before he kind of got the number one spot. He was still on the bench as a kid. And say when the two benches, say if there's some kind of, I don't know, like a bad tackle on the field and the two benches get up and they kind of go at it, he's usually the first up towards the other bench, gesticulating or doing whatever, right? Quite boisterous. So he's a bit of for sure, he's a proper Tokyo fanboy and a very funny fan, right?
Yeah, it's quite funny to watch that. Like, you know, I would have to agree with you now, though. Like, for me, it's like Slovak has been, you know, no disrespect to Hatano, obviously, or Hayashi even. But Slovak has been an incredible breath of fresh air in at the back. You know, last season we were very shaky in defense, and that's more to do with the center back pairings and the people that were in front of the goalkeeper. You know, there's only so much a goalkeeper can do when your team go down to 10 men, or their attack is like constant. Like Maeda was like running circles around our team and at the Nissan Stadium, that 8-0 drubbing, for example. You know, days like that, you need like a strong presence at the back. And unfortunately for the team, we didn't have that until now. You know, now we've got a very strong keeper who's vocal, who's very, very, as you say, commanding in the box on set pieces and so forth. I haven't seen much of this distribution issues. Like, I'm still trying to find that, you know, maybe that's just me being a little bit blind to it.
The Kawasaki game, I think it was particularly highlighted, but it's probably because it's quite new to him, right? I don't think he was doing that at Sendai, having to play short or having to understand where people are going to be.
Right.
You know, these kind of low driven balls that go up the field into space. It's probably going to be all very new to him. Right. Yeah. And like I was saying in the green room before, I think it's a bit of a luxury complaint to have, right? That we didn't really have super high expectations for the beginning of the season, at least. So, I don't know. But Niall, as a Leeds fan, one thing I'm kind of interested in the case of with Melier, right? And when Bielsa first came in, what was his role like? You know, as a keeper in terms of like distribution, was he kind of important, or was he any good at it, or not? Or
yeah, so when Melier came in, he came in as the understudy. We had Kiko Casilla on the books. We signed him from Real Madrid, and he was first choice. And Melier, he was just seen as a young keeper from France who we signed from Lorient. He came in, he played a FA Cup game, and we were really impressed. One, his confidence, but his distribution really stood out. So Casilla got suspended for eight matches. I think this was just before COVID kicked off and Melier came in, and he just fit in like a glove. You know, the short passing was really good. The long balls were really good. So yeah, with Melier at Leeds, he is still vital in terms of distribution. And it's one thing that's never really been talked about. It's just, oh, he's really good at it. He gets on with it and that's okay.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, because that's kind of, you know, if we liken quick to, you know, in terms of his philosophy, he's more similar to Bielsa than he is to, say, Kent Hasegawa, for example. So there might be a point that, you know, maybe one day, if depending on how well Tokyo do, if we're winning the leagues and going for the ACL or something like that, that we might look for a keeper who is a bit better with the distribution. It might be quite important, who knows? But given that, you know, Slovic's so good with the shot stopping, you know, it, like I say, it's a bit of a luxury to have at this point. It is my take on it.
Yeah, I think in terms of goalkeeping, I think, you know, the shot stopping and commanding the area is priority number one. And if they're great at distribution, that's good. But you're right, it's an absolute privilege at the moment. I'm trying to think, it feels like a situation like Joe Hart, Man City. Like, obviously, he's a great goalkeeper. He's a great shot stopper, great commanding the box, but Guardiola just wanted a ball-playing goalkeeper. So I guess it comes down to Purge's preference at the end of the day.
One thing I want to mention on Puig as well is his desire to go with youth on top of all of this. Like, he's willing to tell these players, like, go out and, you know, make mistakes, you know. Do you think, like, maybe he works with Slovic on this? Like, if distribution does become a central problem, it's like, you know, you're an established professional already, you know, you're a veteran on the team now. Like, is it as harsh as you say, like, with regards to, like, Guardiola, right? Like, Guardiola kicked Joe Hart to the curb. Do you think, like, Slovic would down the road maybe encounter the same fate?
It's possible. I mean, yeah. Slovic is what? How old is he now?
Like, he's 30.
He's 30. Yes, he's 30. Yeah, so he's not going to, I mean, if we're talking about development, it's highly unlikely that he's going to improve much in terms of distribution, because that's like a technical skill, right? You learn that when you're a kid, kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it depends how important Puig kind of sees the ball-playing goalkeeper to his plans, and how much Slovic's inability to do it to the standard Puig expects is going to harm the whole thing, the whole game plan. So, we've won the games we've won. We haven't won by much. It's all of them have been by one goal.
Yeah. One nil in Osaka, 2-1 Hiroshima, 1-0 Kyoto.
So we're, I mean, despite this whole kind of idea of, like, attacking philosophy and all the rest of it, we're still kind of eking out the wins. It's not clear wins at all, right? And like you said before, Tom, yesterday it could have easily been 1-1 with that last-minute chance. So you could...
That's my personal gripe of the season so far, is Ogawa just... I have no... Yeah, anyway. All right, you continue. You finish your thought and then I'll go on mine.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's kind of like, you know, we can really attribute some of these wins to Slovic for keeping the clean sheet, or, you know, staying firm at the back. So I think for this season, at least, he's there for the long term. I don't think there's any chance of him losing his place or someone coming in mid-season. We'll have to wait and see, I think.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be any chance of him being replaced mid-season, barring, like, some serious injury that he picks up, you know, knock on wood that doesn't happen. But I'm thinking, like, our biggest weakness right now is just, unfortunately, I think the players are still dealing with COVID slightly. You know, the team's been, I don't think we've had a stable center back pairing. Like, have two of the same center backs started two games in the league?
So not in a row. I did some I did my homework before I came on, but we've played four games in the league and we've had three different center back pairings.
Yeah.
The only one that has stuck is the one of Kimoto and Morishige, and that's not been in consecutive games.
Yeah, so I think, like, you know, obviously coming back from COVID, like, we had the game against Fukuoka, which was more or less, I would say, like, a warm-up game for the players, because a lot of players who started that, you know, Slovic included, were playing to get their match fitness up for the league. And, you know, it obviously showed that, you know, given how some of the players have played since then and how the mixing and matching has gone on, I think our biggest concern right now is right in front of the center back is the center of defensive midfield position, because, you know, Aoki really risked the 3 points against Cerezo when he got himself sent off. Treverson got sent off in the League Cup against Iwata. And, you know, Aoki again got a yellow card and he was risking getting another yellow in the game against Kyoto. So it seems to me that, you know, defensively, we seem to be more stable, but right in front of the defense, we're risking all of these cards. I mean, five games, two yellow cards for two very different stupid plays, right? I'm hoping that we see some reinforcement in that or some stability going forward in that, because, you know, if we're going to rotate the center backs around, you know, we've got one of them in there with Morishige who's capable of playing that position.
One thing I'd say on the cards, I mean, I'll have to go back. Being in the UK, I've just watched the games like once at a glance kind of thing. But yeah. Given how we're playing, like, you know, this attacking, more front-footed, a little bit higher up the pitch, usually the CDM role, when the opponents break, there's a lot more chance, you know, if we're caught off guard kind of thing, there's a lot more chance of us, whoever's playing CDM or whoever's like last man or whatever, they might be a little bit rash in the tackle.
Yeah.
So you can see how, you know, there's always going to be a bit of a risk with the CDM. I mean, we've had a load of, not just with Tokyo, but a lot of the, in the league overall this season, right? There's been a lot of more red cards than usual, more bookings than usual. So that might have a part to play. I don't know. I mean, because the centre-back pairing for me, if I was going to choose, I'd probably have, I mean, other than that, like, especially in the Kawasaki game that I was actually at, so I got a good look. Aoki, he seemed to be okay just doing his duties and things, and he even added a little bit of attacking threat as well, which is a first for him. He got off a couple of shots, that kind of thing. I'd probably go with, from who we have now, Morishige, Trevisan, when he's back or when he's available, and then Aoki in the hole as a CDM. It's not perfect, but from what we have, that's probably what I'd settle on. I mean, you could put Morishige there, but he's probably better as the center back.
Well, with Trevisan getting like that straight red in the League Cup, so he won't be available for this weekend, for example, like when we play Shonan. I think the League Cup suspension rules always confuse the heck out of me. Because I'm never certain, like, how many games they get for straight red. If it's three games or two games or one game, they always, for some reason or another, they always switch it up. But I might think that this might work to Trevorson's benefit, where they have to throw in a different pairing for the center back, and he gets some time in the league. Who knows? But, you know, as you say, maybe that is the desired pairing going forward. Now, how about yourself? What do you think?
I mean, Trevisan's an interesting one. The only time I've seen him in person was the Sanfrecce game, and he came off at halftime. But one thing I said to you, Tom, after the game was that I noticed that Henry Trevisan was our only like ball playing centre back. I mean, granted, it was in the first half when we were really getting pressed to whole hell by Hiroshima, but you know, it was a case of Morishige gives the ball to Trevisan, and then Trevisan's the one that does the distribution. And I feel that like that's the one key facet of Puig ball, is that, you know, it's ball out from the back, it's all progressive football, and I don't see any of the center backs who essentially have that range of passing. So I think not having Trevisan for the next game, I think is probably a bit of a miss. I mean, I watched the Kyoto game this weekend, and it was okay, but it just felt a bit flat. I'm not sure if it was down to the team selection, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's fully set at the moment.
No, aside from the front three of Adalton, Diego, and Kono, you know, every other position seems to be mix and match. And I think part of the problem for me is that, you know, they're still giving Ogawa a lot of time. You know, Puig mentions a lot about about trusting the youth and giving the youth a chance. You know, we do have Hotaka, who, although he's not that, you know, he did have some trial by fire situations last season. You know, he is waiting in the wings and he is quite hungry, I would say. You know, we've got Suzuki, who's still, he did start the league game against the Iwata. So, you know, we did get some game time seen from him, but that game was absolutely dire on the whole. You know, I don't think many shots on target through 90 minutes in that one. I'm a little bit concerned about how the team just keeps seemingly rotating behind the front three. And I want to see a little bit more establishment. Like, I know Nagatomo was one thing. Like, we saw a full 90 from him against Kyoto. He came on at halftime versus Hiroshima. You know, I think he must have been one of the COVID guys, because we didn't see him in the Cerezo game or the Fukuoka game. So, I mean, I think we're still getting just finishing getting off of this wave of COVID cases. And hopefully now we can start seeing a little bit more stability going forward. I honestly don't know where to go on the defensive pairings, because it's just been, you know, one game, different pairing, or next game, you know, who knows what we'll see on this weekend, because it's League Cup. So I'm not expecting to see the best 11. You know, we might see another Mita and Higashi in midfield, and that did not work out well against Iwata. So who knows what to expect there. Are you guys going to the game, by the way?
You know that I'm not.
I know you're not. You chose not to.
Unfortunately, it is the Tom? It's the Tokyo Beer.
You know, it's appropriate. It's an appropriate fixture, I might add, that FC Tokyo Beer Day falls on a fixture with Shonan, of all teams, Shonan Bellmare, the team that we absolutely love to go to and get set the record every year for drinking the most beer at. Tokyo as a whole.
The St. Gallen 10, right? So
the St. Gallen 10, that's it.
COVID might have finished that off, but before that, just so the listeners know, that it's a beer tent that they have just behind the away ground. There's like a concourse by the pond. It really beautifully situated Shonan's ground in the middle of a park.
Great away day fixture.
Yeah, it's lovely. And there's many, many food trucks, but then they have this one beer truck. St. Gallen is like the local brewery, right? Like craft beer, really decent quality beer. And at least they used to, they would tally up how many pints or how many beers have been bought that day. And there'd be like a league table so whichever away team who'd sold the most beer would be at the top, right? And we had the title. We were at the top for the longest time until I think it was when they played a relegation playoff with Tokushima 2 or 3 seasons ago. And it's a bit of a cheat, because St. Gallen sponsored the game. So they had these beer tents, not just behind the away stand, but in the stadium as well. So they could easily sell a lot more than normal. And then apparently they took the record, Tokushima. But really, though, in fairness, we still have it from our game, which was a golden.
Emotionally, we still have it.
Yeah. Sorry?
We are untouched in that one. I think, when was that record set? Was that 2017?
Yeah, I was 2016. It was a while ago. So
2016,
It was the Golden Week game, right? So everyone's off work. Golden Week, the week-long holiday in Japan. We played them away. It was like the Sunday on the Golden Week and then the Monday's off. Everybody from Tokyo went down, sold out the whole allocation. We'd just played in the ACL as well, I remember. We played on the previous Wednesday night in Vietnam, something like this. So all the fans who went, they came back with, you know, those straw hats that they have in Vietnam? They were selling these up the streets as souvenirs, painted blue and red. So you had people walking around with these massive kind of Vietnamese hats, drunk on St. Gallen around the ground. And it was a great day. But yeah, apparently that was the most beer was sold on that day. And that was the record. But incidentally, it's beer day now at Tokyo, right? So maybe the favor will be returned. Maybe they'll bring a few. And
We need to start. I'm hoping that TY Harbor, you know, do some sort of league table like that, you know, because that sort of thing is like that. I think that's one of the things we did, like 2019, we went down to see, it's like, who's top of the table. FC Tokyo 2016 is still like, I don't know how many liters of beer it was, but it was a lot. And no one's come close since then.
It's all to be,
it's appropriate that this, I was just gonna say, it's appropriate that FC Tokyo Beer Day falls on, by the way, I might add, it's also peak Hanami season in Tokyo this coming weekend. So you know, the 26th is expected to be the best day to view cherry blossoms in Tokyo. So you've got FC Tokyo at home on FC Tokyo Beer Day against Shonan Bellmare, who are the kings of, or the pioneers, I guess you could say, of beer table of drink. I don't know how to call it.
It's gonna be a double whammy of alcohol, right, in Japan. That thing, I think. But Tokyo.
So it's probably a good thing you're not going then.
True.
So moving on to one other interesting topic. I don't know. Alex, I think you know about this one. But talking about what's unfortunately happening with regards to Ukraine and Russia, and FIFA announcing that, you know, they're canceling or allowing players to move to other teams who are players for clubs in those two countries. One name obviously comes to mind in Russia, Mr. Kento Hashimoto, who, as we were just talking about with regards to the defensive midfield position, is something we could possibly think about adding more depth to. Alex, I'll start with you again. How plausible do you think it is that he comes back to Tokyo?
Well, the reason I've kind of picked up on this is because I've seen a few things out in the Japanese media kind of speculating about it. FIFA, they're letting any players that are registered to Ukrainian and Russian clubs, they can essentially break their contract without any kind of repercussions until the end of the season and find the club in a different country. So they would essentially just go on loan, right? Well, there'd be no loan payments or something. They would leave their parent club and just go and play for someone else, somewhere else. Mm. So, Kento Hashimoto, he, for those who are kind of new or don't quite remember exactly his role, he was a center, kind of like a CDM, right? Defensive midfielder, but was very good at playing the ball, progressing the play. Even some of our sources inside the club, Tom, have told us that the likes of Diego Oliveira kind of rated him very, very highly in the 2019 season, I think it was. Yep. I think even we heard that Diego even thought that, said something along the lines of that his contribution was a bit more significant than Takefusa Kubo that season. Purely because of the chances and the play that was created through Kento. Anyway, there's been some talk that he's feeling a little bit of a bit unsettled for one reason or another. He's kind of thinking, should I move on? Now is the chance to move on from FC Rostov, which is a club in South Russia, not too far actually from the Ukrainian border, all things considered, right? I know Russia's huge, but he's kind of down that way. So feeling a little bit of a bit uneasy about the situation. From what I understand, the J League is an option, but he is probably going to look for a place, another club in Europe at a higher level, first and foremost. Mm. Failing that, if he doesn't find a club that's kind of to his expectations or whatever, I mean, really, it depends on how low he wants to go, right? If he's going to take any kind of opportunity in Europe, he'll probably find somewhere, right? But say if he doesn't get like a good enough club, then he'll consider Tokyo again, is the kind of word on the street coming from some of the channels that I've seen online. But why that's important is that would kind of solve this kind of jigsaw Tetris issue that we're having with, the CDM role and the back four. He could go quite comfortably into that CDM role, and I think he'd go ahead of Aoki, all things considered. He's still a little bit younger than Aoki, much better than Aoki, so I think Hashimoto he'd fit in quite well. And like we say, he's a proper ball playing player, so he could probably fit the system with Albert quicker than maybe another player. He knows the players as well, so it'd be a very, very smooth fit, I think. But whether it happens or not is kind of to be seen. In terms of possibility, I don't know. I mean, like I say, it depends if he can find another club in Europe and then go. Maybe. Probably, honestly speaking, Tokyo would be kind of somewhat of a last resort.
Yeah, I think the same thing could be said about what happened with Nagatomo, right? Like, he was looking for a club, I think, in Europe and offers weren't coming in. So I think Tokyo had placed a good offer in for him, and it was always on the table, if he ever wanted to come back. And unfortunately, or maybe unfortunately for him, fortunately for us, he decided to come back after not getting many good looks in Europe at the end of it. And who knows, the same thing could come from Hashimoto in this case, and that could bolster us if it's a one season type loan thing, before the World Cup. Maybe he wants to boost his chances if nothing's coming his way, and he wants a chance to try and earn a spot in that 2022 roster. I think, why wouldn't he come back in that case?
Yeah, he is 28, so he's a little bit of a different situation to the Nakamura. He could probably, just looking at the stats now on Transfer Market. So this season, he's only played 10, scored 2 and assisted 2. I don't know where we are at with the Russian Premier League, but that might not, it kind of suggests that he's not playing every single game. I don't know, maybe we do have something to kind of to offer him.
All right, well, I think what we can do is we can wrap it up here for today. One thing I will add though is Alex and Niall, you guys know what the next league game is though, right?
Is it the Marinos one away?
It is the Marinos away game at the Nissan.
I feel that's bringing up PTSD for you, Tom.
That is massive PTSD for me. In two games I've been there, we've been outscored 11-0. And I might add, red cards have been shown in each of those games, one for each team.
Are we feeling brave enough to do predictions?
Good Lord. I'll go for because this is the thing. Tokyo and Marinos are known for one thing, and that's goals. Like, every fixture for the past 3-4 years has been at least 3 goals. So do I go with a 2-1 prediction? You know, hopefully a 2-1 for Tokyo. I think that's what I'll go with. I'll go 2-1 Tokyo, and I'll say our goals will come from Diego with one and Diego and Adelton, I guess. Those will be my two.
Brave.
Indeed.
I'm gonna blind optimism. I'm gonna say a 2-0 Tokyo. I know this is going to end with probably going to end with egg in my face, but I think 2-0, Diego and Adalton, the scorers, and Slovic to somehow keep a clean sheet.
I am a bit sceptical. I think that, you know, this Marinos side, there's quite a lot of the play. I mean, there's a few new players and stuff who are looking quite good, and they've got that Anderson Lopez up front, right, who was at Sapporo. But a lot of them as well, they've kind of been together a while. They've played Tokyo a few times. You know, do we really trust the back line there? Is it going to, like, fall together all of a sudden? You know, the wing backs, especially as they push really high up for us, there's going to be a lot of space there. I'm a little bit – I think both sides have a good shot at scoring a few goals. So I'm going to go 2-2. I'm going to go with
it. Okay.
Yeah, we will both exploit each other's kind of defensive frailties would be my take.
I mean – Our massive defensive frailty is going to be Ogawa bombing down the wing into the opposition box. Mm. Like you look at, if you rewatch the highlights of our Kyoto game, you know, their very last chance with Utaka swinging the ball into the box, our center backs are, you know, sprinting back to get into position. You've got Ogawa doing a light jog while his marker just sprints past them. Once Ogawa realizes it, then he tries to pick up the pace. Maybe it throws him off a bit, I don't know, but either way, there's no way that Ogawa should have let that happen. The goal against Fukuoka in the League Cup, Ogawa was a pylon in that one. So if anybody from the Marinos side, shout out to the tricolor guys, they're listening, you know, they obviously want to exploit Ogawa.
I think our wing backs are told to do that, right? That to get really high.
Mean, this guy is sitting inside the 6-yard box when the ball is going back the other way.
Right.
Like it's frustrating to watch sometimes. Just looking at him play, and I'm like, dude, like, I know you were told to get forward, but at least make the defensive effort to get back because you're making us a man less at defense.
So. What happens with Nagatomo then? Because he's going away with Japan side, right? So he should be back by then, but I don't know if there's any kind of fussiness.
So Matsuki is a high question mark as well.
Because
he's with the U23 team in Qatar, I think it is, or Saudi Arabia. So him and Nagatomo are questionable for the Marinos game.
Yeah, the last international game's on the 29th, so, I mean, they might be back.
No way. 29th of March? Because then they've got to come through all this quarantine. Or
29th. Well, they're away to Australia on the 24th. Right. Then the 29th, it's home to Vietnam. So
So they should be done the quarantine and whatnot. They should be able to eat. Well, Nagatomo should be able to do it. I don't know about Matsuki. Matsuki is going off to some summer cup or something.
That means we might see Higashi back in the lineup if Matsuki's out. But no, I don't think that Nagatomo will start that game against Marinos. I think it'll be Ogawa, and it's very risky. But Yoma Watanabe, who is by trade, a right winger kind of player, I think he could be back. Or if they were going to go more defensive, it would be that Suzuki guy, right, Junior Suzuki, who isn't like he's a solid back, right? Like
he's a more defensive focused player. But he does and he does offer a heck of a long throw. That's a nice attacking option that we could have in the event that we do get up there.
Yeah.
So let's hope the next time we gather for episode 4 that we have more positives to talk about after the first month of Puig Ball, or Pucci Ball, as we may want to call it. but yeah, Niall, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, Alex, we'll look forward to doing this again soon.
Of course we will. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.